This week's parasha is Parashas Matos Masei. At the very end of Parashas Matos, there's an interesting pasuk. The pasuk says about a man from Menashe, a conqueror, a very strong warrior. V'noivach halach, Noivach was his name, he went, v'yilkoid es kinos ves b'nei seha, and he captured the city of Kinos and the villages surrounding Kinos, all the environs of Kinos. Vayikra la Noivach Bishmai. And he called the city of Kinos, he renamed it Noivach Bishmai after him. So basically, he renamed the city, he rebranded the city, and he named it after himself, and that was Noivach. Now, if you would be a Baldikduk, you would notice that the word La, Vayikra La, is without a mapik hay. There's no dot in the hay. Putting a dot in the hay implies, or would have implied, a certain sense of permanence, but because that there's no dot in the hay, that sort of sets off alarms by the Balei Dikduk. And they say, why shouldn't there be a mapik hay? It should say, Vayikra La, Noivach Bishmai, that they called her, meaning the name of the city was permanently named Noivach, after the conqueror Noivach. So Rashi actually points this out. And Rashi says, La, that word, Lamed Hey, La, Vayikra La, Einai Mapik Hey. There is no Mapik Hey there. V'ra'isi b'yisaydei shel Rav Moshe HaDarshan. And I saw in the foundations that were set forth by Rav Moshe HaDarshan, Lefi shelei niskayim la shem zeh, Leficha chi rafa. The reason that it was called, it says it La without a Mapik Hey, is because this name that he called it, which was Noivach, it didn't last. There was no kiyum to that name. So because there was no kiyum, because this was not an eternal monument to himself as he had hoped it would be, so it was called La, Vayikra La, Noivach Bishmai. It wasn't La, which would imply a permanence, but it's La, Vayikra La. It was a weakening. It was a weakened form of calling the name because it wasn't really something that had a long-term kiyum. The question is, why is this so important for the Torah to tell us this detail? This Lamed Hey without the Mapik in it, it seems like it's something obviously of great importance that Rashi points it out, and that the Torah thereby is going out of its way to tell us that some long-lost city in an ancient Middle East that was called Noivach at one point, after it was called Kinos, it wasn't a permanent name. Like, does that really affect our mourning this morning? Does anyone really care about the fact that Kinos is not, that Noivach was no longer called Noivach after a certain period of time, that the name didn't stick? Does that have any ramifications for us permanently? Well, obviously it does, because if the Torah is saying it, then clearly there was something that the Torah wants us to know. So Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch says the following beautiful yesod, and he tells us that there's a great Musar Haskel at play over here. This is not a simple matter. This is a great Musar Haskel, and I think it's very nageya to us in the times that we're living in. Very often the parasha speaks to us, if you look carefully, and there is a tremendous Musar Haskel going on from this pasuk to our current lives today. Rav Hirsch says as follows, Derech gedolei umos ha'olam. It's the way of the great people of the nations of the world, lahansiach eshmeisehem al yedei matzeves ubinyanim, to eternalize, or at least to attempt to immortalize their names through calling monuments after themselves, through calling structures, edifices, different cities, different states, different airports, bridges, tunnels. That's the way that people want to be remembered, correct? You go over any tunnel, there's the Lincoln Tunnel named after Abraham Lincoln. There's the Kosciuszko Bridge, whoever that might be. There's the Van Wyck Expressway, and then there's Ben-Gurion Airport, and then there's Leningrad and Stalingrad and Washington, D.C. and Washington State. And the list goes on and on. That's the normal way in the world that great people, great leaders, they long for being immortalized by building themselves monuments, highways, structures, or by having other people do it, or by hoping that after they die, other people will do that for them, because they see a certain permanence in this, and they feel that if these great monuments and these great pillars of society, of their country, is able to have a certain name, which is named after them, that will give them a legacy. That will make sure that in 100 years from now, in 1,000 years from now, perhaps, people will still remember who they are. But, says Rav Hirsch, Aval ein zu derech hayados hanemana. This is not the Jewish way. This is not what us Jews believe in. What do we believe in? Ki hamatseva shal eitz ve'evan nifsadim b'rveis hayomim. We know as days pass, as decades pass, as centuries pass, what happens to these structures? The wood begins to become all warped. The wood becomes moldy. The wood has to be taken away, be torn down. Statues erode after centuries or even decades of wear and tear, of wind, of other types of things going on. The kinyane ruach kaivim shem ilam. You know what the only thing permanent is? A Jew believes that these types of structures, impressive though they may be, they're not permanent. There's nothing permanent to them. What a Jew understands has nitzchias value. If you're looking to create a legacy for yourself, if you're looking to somehow emboss the world with your memory, with the fact that you were here, and who doesn't want that? Nobody wants to just pass through the world without having any, you know, recollection in the world that you ever existed. Everybody wants to make their permanent mark on the world. But the marks that we should be looking to make is not that we should have our name emblazoned on a hospital or on a bridge or on a tunnel or on some monument somewhere. What a Jew understands is the most permanent and important marker in order to stay immortalized is only ruchniyistika things. Physical structures come and go. Ruchnias, things that are spiritual things are here forever. So if I learn, if we're all learning right now, Baruch Hashem, together, that's something that will maintain itself in a million years from now. The fact that we're learning Torah right this minute has far-reaching effects, not just for a decade, not just for a century, not just for 1,000 years, but for trillions of years henceforth. The fact that right now we're doing something ruchnias is very powerful. The same thing is true when we daven. The same thing is true when we give tzedakah, when we do chesed, when we help one another, when we're mechabed our parents, anything that we do of a spiritual nature, that's schusa emedesla, that's something that retains itself forever and ever. In perpetuity, spiritual monuments that we create for ourselves are here forever. The physical structures that are very impressive to the fleshy eye, we're living in this world, we understand, we're impressed by powerful people, we're impressed by by monuments, by statues, by when somebody has a street named after them, a highway named after them. We understand that that seems chashuv. We're impressed. Can't deny that. But Rav Hirsch is reminding us that there's really not too much to be impressed by, because these things come and go. It seems like permanent. Wow, in 100 years from now, everybody's still going to know the Van Wyck Expressway, who Van Wyck was. I don't even know who he is today, but I assume he's like probably a governor of New York or something, a mayor of New York. But this guy's going to be permanently ensconced in history because he has a major thoroughfare named after him, Jackie Robinson. These are people that we were impressed by. Wow, they got highways named after them. Begin in Eretz Yisrael, there's Begin, and then there's even, you know, there's so many highways and streets that are named after important people, and we look at that as something important. Rav Hirsch says, don't get impressed by those things, because those things are very, very temporary by nature. The only thing that we should be impressed by is people that focus on spiritual matters, being Marbitz Torah, by bringing Kedusha into the world, davening, getting closer to Rabbeinu Shalom, being Makar of other people. Those are real monuments that a person is creating for himself. L'netzach netzachim. And he ends, Noivach Shem Ha'ir Kara Shem Ha'ir Al-Shamay. Noivach, he named that city his name. He named the city that was formerly known as Knas. He made a big ceremony. He christened the city, or whatever you call it, after the name Noivach. And everybody's, wow, that's a great accomplishment. Noivach, you have a name, you have a city named after you. I mean, people are going to write on their envelopes forever, you know, Noivach, and then the zip code. It's an incredible thing. Noivach is like now... People were probably very jealous of him. He has a you know, city named after him, post offices with his name on it, and public school buildings with his name on it, and who knows what else. Very impressive, Noivach. But don't be impressed. Ki ratzlan hanzisha. He thought that he was going to immortalize himself by this naming. V'hatayra maidia. And the Torah in this week's parsha is informing us, ki shem zelay niskayim lo. That name, it didn't work out for him too well. He thought it was going to give him a permanence in this world, but nobody knows. That city is no longer called Noivach. It was a temporary thing, and then the name was changed to something else. We don't even know what the name is today, maybe, but it's not Noivach. That much we know. And so the Torah is going out of its way and telling us a very, very important yesod. And we learn it from a single dot, from a mapik hei. It's amazing. It's not even a kutza shel yud. It's a mapik hei. And it's not even a mapik hei. It's the absence of a mapik hei. It's the absence of that dot in the, and we have a whole shmooze from the absence of a dot in a hei. Amazing. What's the shmooze? The shmooze is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by writing in the Torah the word law without a mapik hei, is telling us a lifelong lesson. Do not be impressed by all of the glitter and all the glamour and all of the impressionable events that are taking place around us in this world, because it's all temporary. It doesn't last. It's all not worth anything. One word of Torah that we're learning this morning is more valuable than all the bridges and all the tunnels and all the statues and all the monuments put together. One word of Torah. One syllable of Torah. One mapik hei of Torah. Everything else, transient, flimsy, impermanent. Spirituality, ruchnias, that's chai v'kayim, la'olam olam me'olamim. That is forever. That's forever. Over the course of not ancient history, but over the course of the last few decades, I witnessed it myself. I know a lot of you were not born yet, or all of you were not born yet. But throughout the last 30 years, there has been sweeping changes in this world. The collapse of the Soviet Union. The collapse of the Soviet Union. What happened? For 70 years, the Malchus HaRasha'a, the evil empire, which was the Soviet Union, started by a Yid by the name of Lenin, who brought communism into the world. And then Stalin took over, and and other very, very ruthless dictators, killing millions of their own people, going after religion, not allowing Klal Yisrael to worship the Ribbono Shel Olam. They had to do it all very hiddenly, refuseniks. And people thought that the Soviet Union would last forever and ever. It was the superpower. It was USA and the Soviet Union in everything, in the nuclear buildups, in the Olympics, in everything. It was basically the world dominance was USA representing the West and the Soviet Union representing the East. Two different hashkafas, capitalism versus communism. They did not like each other whatsoever, but people thought this was going to be two superpowers that would exist forever. The Soviet Union was Russia, and then all of the satellite nations around it, like Ukraine, Czechoslovakia, all of these, Poland, all these countries, they used to be all part of the Soviet bloc, very, very powerful. One day, a man by the name of Gorbachev became the head of Russia, and for some reason, nobody knows exactly why, but Lev Sar Mumlachim Biad Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts things in leaders' hearts, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of uses leaders as chess pieces, as pawns on his chessboard, and he basically put this thing in his head that he wants to concede. He thinks that communism was a failed experiment. He wants to open up society in Russia. It was called perestroika. He wants to basically do away with all of the hashkafas of Lenin and Stalin, all this very powerful image of communist Russia, which was a superpower. Lahadam, we're not doing it anymore. People started chiseling away at the Berlin Wall, which separated East Berlin and West Berlin. And what happened was, overnight, people, all of those Soviet bloc states, countries, they basically started peeling away. They all declared independence. And Gorbachev sort of allowed it. It was fine because he's Michalit. He wanted to sort of, undo this whole mess, which was the Soviet Union. And you could look it up. All the statues of Lenin's statue was kemat probably in every city throughout the entire vast Soviet Union. He was like the god of Russia. There was no god. God was not allowed to be worshipped, so they had human gods. Suddenly, as soon as this Soviet Union collapsed, like overnight, it was a bloodless revolution. There wasn't a single shot fired. No nuclear weapons, Baruch Hashem, had to happen in order to undo the Soviet Union. They just basically said, okay, we surrender. To who? To ourselves. We just don't want to do it anymore. All of those statues of Lenin, had nooses around their necks, and they were torn down by hordes of people, and then like carried away to some junkyard somewhere. They have pictures of the junkyard of all Lenin's statues. His head was off, his body was somewhere else, decapitated. He was basically nothing. Cities that were named after him, Leningrad and Stalingrad, all these, they were all renamed, going back to what they used to be. In other words, like Neivach, who thought that he would have permanence by physical cities being named after him, by monuments, they just, Lenin, Stalin, no one in a couple of hundred years ago will know about them through history books maybe, but they're not going to be prominent people because even though they had their 70 years in the sun, but that was it. They were torn down. Now they're looked at as poorly in the eyes of the world, in historians' eyes. And then more recently, Saddam Hussein when the United States attacked Iraq and moved in there, the people hated, these were despots. We, you know, looked like, but while he was in power, everybody was Karim Mishdachavali because they had to, otherwise they'd get killed. But after the U.S. came in, they started pulling down all those statues of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And then more recently, in recent times, over the last few weeks, we see the same thing happening in our country. We think, okay, that's good in these crazy countries. You know, in Iraq and Soviet Union, these are very, very fragile situations. These are regimes and people don't like them. They're not happy. You know, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, you know, these are people that as soon as they go down, everybody's going to be happy. But in America, America is a free democracy. Everything is good here. So here, if I have something named after me, if I have a statue named after me, if I'm a founding father, if my face is on Mount Rushmore, that's it. You're ensconced forever. But now we see that that's not true either. Because there is a movement afoot that every single person that owned a slave, every single person that is somewhat, you know, suspect of doing something, you know, for the Confederacy, which, you know, sort of, were slave owners, everything has to go. You can't fly a Confederate flag. You have to take down the Jefferson Memorial. You have to take away some of the Lincoln memorials because there's some questionable. I'm not weighing in here about the propriety of having slaves. I think, you know, we could all agree that it's not a good thing to have slaves. But my point here is that nothing is permanent. Even a good guy like Thomas Jefferson, brilliant founding father who did so much for this country, in one day he's going to, if we find out something wrong about George Washington, everything could be changed. No more Washington, D.C. It could be Goldberg, D.C. next week. We don't know what's going to be, but everything could change. Everything could change. Just like Naivach thought that his name would be forever and he was wrong, and the Torah tells us that he was wrong. We see in our own lifetime, right now, in this day and age, today, how everything that you thought was so permanent when you went on your class trip to Washington, D.C. in eighth grade and you saw the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, beautiful monuments of a desirous even to democracy, to USA, to power, to this country's foundations, it all comes and goes overnight. What looks permanent today, tomorrow is gone. When I graduated from Touro, it was also going back quite a while, the graduation took place in Lincoln Center, and the hall was always named after the hall, was called Avery Fisher Hall. Avery Fisher Hall. Who is Avery Fisher? Avery Fisher was a financier. He lived, I think he died, or he died, I know he died. He gave, I think in 1973, he donated to have this hall, this Chasheva Hall in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He had it named after him from 1973 on. He bought permanent rights to it. And he paid at the time $10 million. $10 million today seems very cheap for that. You can't really buy a house in Borough Park for that anymore. But today, $10 million would, in 73, $10 million in 73 today is about $60 million. So that's already, you know, that's already back Lawrence. Okay, so that's getting more chashuv. What happened was, a couple years ago, Lincoln Center wanted to renovate because it's an old building, 1973. It's like, you know, they have to fix it up a little bit, put new bathrooms in, you know, make a nice new hall, and it's going to cost a lot of money. Now, it's very hard to raise real money unless you have, unless you give people the naming rights. So you know what they did? They decided they're going to change the name from Avery Fisher Hall to anything that the top bidder will be willing to give, we'll name it after you. A fellow by the name of David Geffen, who is a Yid, who's a billionaire, is very, very big in the music business. He said, listen, he's not married. He lives a different lifestyle. He has no children. He wants some permanence in this world. So he says, listen, I'll give you $100 million And from now on, it's going to be named the David Geffen Hall. Now, what happened was it created a little bit of an uproar, as you can imagine, because Avery Fisher had Yarshim. He had a family. He had children. And the children, like, you know, see, I guess, like on, you know, in the newspaper that Avery Fisher Hall is now renamed David Geffen Hall, and say, wait a minute. They put in a call to the executive director, I guess, of Lincoln Center, and they say, hey, Rabbi Say, Rabbi Yid, like, what's going on over here? Like, how are you? That's our Tati's monument. He gave $10 million in 1973 to have it named Avery Fisher Hall. What are you doing? Is that fair? So somebody had a Yiddish cup in Lincoln Center, and they said, you know what, you're 100% right. Take $15 million and just go away. Take $15 million, they got $100 million, so now they'll be left with $85 million, not the end of the world either. Take $15 million and, you know, so everybody's happy. Avery Fisher's kids are very happy. They couldn't care less that their father's name is off the building. We got $15 million. David Geffen is happy because now it's named after him for $100 million. A good goodbye. But the funny thing is, to me, about this whole story is that David Geffen honestly believes that for some reason he's going to be better going forward than Avery Fisher. He thinks, Avery Fisher, he had bad mazel. He had bad mazel. But me, you know, Baruch Hashem, I got $100 million, it's mine. No, you tippish. In 10 years from now, in 20 years from now, Lincoln Center is going to have to do another renovation, $1 billion renovation. And now they're going to call a guy by the name of Jeff Bezos. Hey, you want to call it the Amazon Hall? Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. And you know what? David Geffen doesn't even have kids to be paid off. So he's really ripe for the picking. After he dies, I mean, I don't even think they're going to wait for the Shiva to be over. They're going to already go out for the renaming rights. That's the way this world is. It's such a joke. It's such a joke. We think that something that's permanent is ours forever and ever. Something that's physical, these monuments, these structures, these namings, nothing. It's all nothing. And all of this the Torah is telling us in this week's parasha, amazing. Because of the absence of a mapike in the word lar, Rav Hirsch points out, it's the greatest musar shmuz, the absence of a mapike, the absence of permanence. The mapike says, la, it's yours. But the Torah doesn't say, you'll pay attention tomorrow in the Kriyas HaTorah. It just is very, very, like it whimpers the law. It's law. It's law. There's no permanence to it. There's nothing there. You're naming a city after yourself. You think that's going to give you permanence? That's going to make you immortal? It's not. The only thing that's going to give you immortality is spiritual pursuits. Is doing things that the Rabbeinu Shalom wants us to do, is mitzvah us to do. Those are things, every little thing that we do right gives us permanence. There's a chazal in Maseches Shkalim that says, Ein eisen nefashes letzadikim. We don't believe in making monuments for tzadikim. Nefashes is a soul, but it really means a monument also. We don't make monuments for tzaddik. We don't believe in, you know, there's no such thing as Rav Moshe Feinstein Museum or, Rav Aaron Cutler statue or, we don't believe in that. We don't make monuments for tzaddikim. Why? Because zichroinam heim nafshesayim. The monuments that they have is their memory. We're talking about Rav Moshe Feinstein today. He's immortal. I never heard anyone say Rav Moshe held, you know, that's mutter. I always hear people say, Rav Moshe holds that this is mutter. Rav Moshe feels that that's okay. Rav Moshe says, Rav Moshe said, Rav Moshe says, because he's very much alive. The memories that we have of tzaddikim are the greatest permanence. Abaye says, Rava says, the Rambam holds, the Ktzayis Tainas, it's all in Lashon Haive. That's permanence. That's permanent. You ever heard everyone say, so George Washington says that I will not cut down the cherry tree. You know, no. No one says that. Everyone says when it comes to non-tzaddikim, it's all past tense. They're gone. If we're even talking about them anymore, it's always in the past tense. The memories of tzaddikim are always current. They're alive. They're alive today, maybe even more than they were when they were alive then. That's permanence. That's living eternally. That's touching immortality. Famous story about the Panovich Rav who was traveling in Rome on some fundraising. I don't know who exactly you could fundraise from in Rome. Apparently there were some wealthy Jews there. And he was collecting money for his yeshiva, for Panovich, and for all of his institutions. And the Panovich Rav asks the driver of the taxi, as they're passing the Arch of Titus, as they call it, he says, would you mind stopping the car, pulling over? I just want to get out of the car and see the Arch of Titus. This is a permanent arch. This is the famous arch in the heart of Rome where the parade, that famous, infamous parade, where they took all the captives of the Churban Bayis and all of the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and there is a famous... relief on the side of this Arch of Titus that has all of the menorah and the Aron and all the scene depicted of and all the captive Jews that were being hauled into Rome for who knows what purpose. And this is called the Arch of Titus because Titus was the conqueror of Yerushalayim, so they named this after him. His brother actually had this built, this structure, and it's not a permanent structure. It's been around for a long time, thousands of years. So the Panovich Rav gets out of the car, and he's together with a Mr. Rothschild who was there with him, collecting money, helping him out. And he gets out, he straightens his tie and his frock. He makes himself nice and clean. He straightens his hat. And he goes straight for this arch. And Mr. Rothschild had no idea, you know, what he was doing. What's the Panovich Rav want? All of a sudden, he's a tourist. He's going sightseeing in Rome. Like that's what he has to do now. He starts talking to Titus HaRasha, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And he said to, as if to Titus himself, but he was like screaming. He says, Titus, I am here to talk to you. Thousands of years ago, you destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, but today nobody knows who you are. You're dead. There's no such thing as Rome, as an empire. Your empire collapsed many, many years ago. Very few people know who Titus is, who Titus is, if anyone today. I am coming here from my yeshiva in Bnei Brak called Panovich. And in my yeshiva today, we have hundreds of boys sitting and learning Torah, Bekdusha Vatara. They're learning Abaye, they're learning Rava, they're learning Rabbi Kiva, they're learning Rabbi Tarfon. We are still so much alive, and you are no longer. We will be here forever, and you not. And with that, he went back into the car and sped off. But that's really the personification of this shmooze. This is what we're talking about. Yeah, Titus has some statue erected. Who cares? There's no permanence to that. It doesn't make him alive in any way. His legacy is long dead, if there was a legacy at all. But Klal Yisrael is chayv akayim through the spiritual legacy that we are continuing, dar achar dar. And a person has to be impressed by spiritual pursuits, spiritual edifices, and not so much or not at all by the physicality that surrounds us. Yeah, we pass by buildings and bridges and tunnels and statues. We say, wow, this guy has it made. He's got a legacy. He's got a battleship named after him. We're going to name a spaceship after him. We're gonna make a big monument on the mall in Washington, D.C. We're going to make a museum. No one cares. That's not permanence. That it seems permanent today, but it's here today, gone tomorrow. Tomorrow, somebody else will outbid him, and or they'll become financially insolvent, and now is Bayakam al-Khadosh. What we have to do is we have to make sure that we realize the importance of our spiritual buildings and not of the physical buildings. I'll tell you an amazing medrash, and I've said this before, but it's one of my favorite medrashim and I have a knetch on it. There's a medrash that says as follows. Once upon a time, Rabbi Akiva bumped into Rabbi Tarfon in the shuk, in the marketplace of where they lived. Rabbi Tarfon was Teiro Gedul B'Makom Echad. Rabbi Tarfon was a Tana, and a great Tana at that. They're all great, but he was really famous, Rabbi Tarfon. And he was also probably one of the wealthiest men of his generation. Extreme, extreme wealth. And extreme Chachmas HaTaira. So he had it all, pretty much. Rabbi Akiva bumps into Rabbi Tarfon in the shuk. So imagine they're standing on the equivalent of Madison and 57th Street, that's like the Spitz epicenter of New York City. That's where all the fancy stores are and all the beautiful people are walking there. And he says to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Tarfon, would you want to invest in a great real estate deal? A great real estate deal, like tremendous package, a portfolio of buildings. I could get it very cheap. Would you want to invest in this tremendous real estate portfolio? Rabbi Tarfon says, yeah, I love real estate. I like to hop up as much as possible. How much is the investment? He says, it's $10 million. It's not bad. Real estate is generally a little bit more than that. Sounds reasonable. Fine. Anyway, he says, don't ask me too many questions. Wire the $10 million into my account and I'll work out all the, okay, Rabbi Akiva, you could trust Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Tarfon Taka gives him $10 million. And then, they haven't seen each other in a while. And then a couple of weeks later, they're walking again, 57th and Madison, and they bump into each other again, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Tarfon says, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Akiva, how are you? He says, Baruch Hashem, how are you? Yeah, good, how's the family? By the way, Rabbi Akiva, you remember a while back, you asked me to invest in your real estate? He says, yeah. He says, well, I gave you the money, and I never got any update about how the portfolio is doing. Are we in the red? Are we in the black? Are we good? Are we up? Are we down? Like sideways? What's going on? So Rabbi Akiva got a little pale in the face. He says, Rabbi Tarfon, I want to take you with me into a base medrash. Come, let's go. He says, listen, Rabbi Akiva, I don't have time right now to learn and to die. I'm busy. I have to do things. He says, please, just come with me to the base medrash. They come into the base medrash together. Rabbi Akiva takes off the shelf a sefer called Sefer Tehillim. He opens up the Tehillim to a pasuk. The pasuk says, Pizer, Nasan lev yainim, if you scatter liberally money to the impoverished, to the really poor, and Evian is like much poorer than an ani. If you do that, if you scatter your money liberally, tzidkasai imedes laad, your righteousness will remain for you in perpetuity. Rabbi Akiva looks at Rabbi Tarfon in the eye and says, Rabbi Tarfon, I want you to know something. I told you that you were going to invest that money in buildings. And I wasn't really lying, but I wasn't putting it into physical buildings. Physical buildings are very temporary. I was putting it into permanent buildings, much more valuable than physical buildings, because it's of the spiritual sort. You see, I gave all of that $10 million out to Aniyim. And that's what I did with your money. Now, I don't know what you would do if you were a tarifin at that point. I think you probably would probably do what I do, and that I would not be very happy with Rabbi Akiva. But the Medrash says that Amad Rabbi Tarfon got up in Noshkay al Reshet. He kissed Rabbi Akiva on the forehead. And he said, you did good. You did good. It was a good investment. One of the most beautiful Medrashim ever. The one problem that I had with the Medrash, well, obviously there's other problems with the Medrash, and the Chavetz Chaim deals with, you know, the Chesh Mishpah problems with the Medrash, because that ain't what Rabbi Tarfon thought he was getting himself into, and the Chavetz Chaim deals with that. That's not, that unfortunately is not my biggest problem with the Medrash. My problem with the Medrash was, why did Rabbi Akiva have to schlep Rabbi Tarfon into the Beis Medrash? They were standing in Midtown, whatever, Spitz. Why do you have to schlep Reb Tarfon into Midtown? Tell him on the street, I gave it to Tzedakah. Is that a good question? And I think the answer is very pashut. When you're standing on 57th and Madison, and you're looking at all the shiny buildings all around you, Trump Tower here and Trump Palace there and Trump World there, and all of the Teslas and the limousines and the Ferraris and Lamborghinis are whizzing by. And then you're looking at showrooms of Gucci and Harry Winston and Tiffany and all these Spitz companies all around you there on that prime block. It won't go in your ear, this chap of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is saying, I took that $10 million and it's not in buildings here, it's for Aniyim, it's in a kailal, I built some mikvahs. You did what with my money? I don't think that the probability of Rabbi Tarfon kissing Rabbi Akiva on the forehead would be that high in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. I think it's more likely that he might have reacted the way we would naturally react, even in a Beis Medrash. But when you're in a Beis Medrash, and that's where Rabbi Akiva took him into that holy space, that you don't see buildings, and you don't see monuments, and you don't see the magnetic lure of all things that seem to be glittering in this world. All you see is benches, shtenders, Aron HaKodesh, Svarim shelves. In that environment, the trueness of Rabbi Akiva's investment could be understood. Rabbi Tarfon understood then very well and good that he's right. What do I need those buildings? Those buildings aren't going to... Once I die, that's it. Those buildings are going to go to... Who knows? Maybe the government is going to take over those buildings. Maybe my kid, maybe the next... You know, maybe tomorrow the whole... Another... You know, the Romans are going to attack and take all the buildings. That's not permanent. This is permanent. Torah is permanent. Tzedakah is permanent. Chesed is permanent. Ruchnius is permanent. These are things that are going to be tzedkasa emedes lad. There's no greater investment than that. There's no greater investment. But that's something that you need to have the ears to hear. Because if you tell it to people and they're not in the right mood, or they're not in the frame of mind, or they're not in the right place to hear it, they're going to snicker at this vart. They're not going to like the Neubach Vart. They're not going to like the Rabbi Akiva Vart. They're going to get angry with Rabbi Akiva. How could he do that? And ask all types of questions. But in a Beis Medrash, in a Makom Torah, hopefully there we'll have a little bit of a better grasp of what's immortal and what's eternal and what's true in this world. And only there could Rabbi Akiva really express to Rabbi Tarfon what he did with the money. Not in the middle of the shuk. When we are very exposed to the shuk, then we get very impressed by things that we shouldn't be so impressed by. We get impressed by movie stars, by billionaires, by people that are very successful in their fields of medicine and law and finance. We get impressed by people that dress fancy, that drive a Spitz car. These are things that are very impressive to us. You know why? Because we're out in the shuk too long. When we're finding ourselves in the Beis Medrash, in a Makom Torah, you think people in Panovich, you think people in Chevron, you think people in Kol Torah, you think people in Brisk could care less what you're driving? You think they could care less what kind of house you have? What kind of kitchen you put in? They don't care about those things because they're not important. They're not important. People that are immersed in Ruchnius, they don't care about Gashmius so much. They need it. Obviously, we all need to live. But it's not something that they're talking about. Wow, you saw the car that guy's driving, crazy, Spitz car. I wish I could. How did he do that? How did he afford? Well, I heard he made partner in his law. People that are immersed in Ruchnius, they couldn't care less. Couldn't care less. There's a famous story of somebody that came to Rav Steinemann and said to Rav Steinemann, you know, I made a lot of money and I want to buy a Lexus. Rav Steinemann said, what's a Lexus? A Lexus is a Spitz car. It's like mamish gashmiistik. It's geshma. Like in Eretz Yisrael, a Lexus is still Spitz. You know, Mercedes, everybody has Mercedes there. They opened up Lexus dealerships. Everybody wants a Lexus. So I want to get a Lexus. But I'm afraid, my wife and I are afraid of Ayin Hara. People are going to see we're driving a Lexus. It's going to be a big Ayin Hara. We came to the Rosh Yeshiva to ask his Eitzah. Is it an Ayin Hara? Should we get the car? Should we not get the car? What should we do? Rav Steinemann said, let me ask you a question. Do you have a mesechta that you know really well that you're ready for me to fahar you on? He says, no. Can't take a fahar, and I'm not prepared to take a fahar in any mesechta. He says, okay, fine. Any perek in Shas, any? No. What about a daf? No. What about a taisis? No. What about a rashi? No. He says, buddy, listen to me. Nobody is going to give you an ayin hara. Buy all the cars you want. You ain't getting no Ayin Hara. You know why Rav Steinemann said that? Not because he was trying to make the guy feel bad, but because he was immersed in a world of Kiddush, in a world of Tara, in a world of true permanence. He looks at cars like it's a joke. This is what people are machshev, a stupid car with four wheels and a driverless thing and a key lock entry, you know, keyless entry. Who cares? That's what makes you chashev because you happen to have enough money in your pocket to lease a car for. No one cares if you're not in the shuk. If you're in the shuk, this guy is this guy, a doctor, a lawyer, a fancy, shmeh. You got married here in New York Hilton and a 30-piece band, Shwecky. That's only because we're out in the shuk too much. Once we get away from the shuk, once we're able to really be immersed in Torah like we should be, like our brain should be, it's a different world for people like that. Nobody's impressed with monuments. Ask people that are in the, learning in Lakewood. But really learning in Lakewood and Kailal and saying Chaburas, ask them if they care about the fact that, that the Avery Fisher Hall was changed now to the David Geffen. Who cares? What are you talking about? This goes into a schmooze, that material? I don't even understand what you're talking about. You mean you wasted 10 minutes of all these boys' times talking about Avery Fisher Hall and David Geffen? I don't even know what are you talking about? What is Lincoln Center? Who cares about Lincoln Center? That's how far it goes. They say, and it might be apocryphal, but there was a chashuv, a younger man learning, not a younger man, he was learning in Kailan maybe 30 years, 40 years. And somebody once wanted to engage this guy that was mamash ala tarev ala avayda for 40 years in Lakewood. And they were talking about, like, and this is not so long ago, maybe when Bush was president, they were trying to engage this guy in some politics. He says, who's the president today? Is it, I think it must be Truman. Truman must be the president today. Truman? You think Truman is the president? Are you kidding me? What is it? It's Kennedy. He has no idea who the president of the United States of America is, because he doesn't care. He's not living in that world of monuments and covered and Washington D.C. and corridors of power. He doesn't care. He cares. He's living in the corridors of Abaye Barava. He's living in the corridors of Ravina and Ravashi. He's living in the corridors of the Sais and the Nesivos, of the Shach and the Taz, of the Meshech Chachma and the Beis HaLevi. That's where he's living. He doesn't care about these things. These things are not important to him because he's not in the Shuk, he's in the Beis Medrash. And we can evaluate very easily where we're holding. And I'll throw myself in with the whole Chevra. You ask yourself, if you want to know where, you know, if you want to take your Ruchnistika temperature and see where you're holding really in life, ask yourself, are you impressed? What impresses you? Are you impressed when you hear somebody got into a Spitz medical school, got into one, and it gives you like a tinge of jealousy, or a guy just made a $1 million on the stock market, or a guy just did a Spitz Shidduch with a very wealthy family, and the chasta is going to be... Is that impressive to you? Or is it impressive to you when a guy says, I'm making a siyum, I'm Masechet Shabbos. I'm making a, you know, I have a chavrusa at 12 o'clock at night in Mesos Yisharim with some. What's impressive to us? What's more impressive to us on the scales in our mind? Are we, wow, this guy just made a siyum on the whole Masechet Shabbos and knows it? If we give that a 5, what do we give on a scale from 1 to 10, somebody that just made $30 million in the stock market? Is that a 1, or is that an 8, or 10, or 20? That's how we measure where we're holding in Ruchnias. Vayikra Allah Naivach B'Shmai, the Torah is saying, guys, there's no Mapeke. It didn't even deserve a Mapeke, for crying out loud. The fact that Naivach named a city after him, who cares in the scope of history, in the sweep of history, nobody cares about Naivach if you're in the Beis Medrash, if you're learning Parashas Matos Masai, if you're laning it and hearing it, and your ears are sensitive to the nuances of the Torah, nobody cares about Naivach's rebranding of his city. Was Naivach a Talmud Chacham? Did he learn Torah? Did he have good kids? Did he raise a nice family? Did he give tzedakah? Did he daven with kavana? That's all that we care about today about Naivach. And if we don't know that about Naivach, then Naivach is pretty much worthless to us. That is such a fundamental lesson for all of us, and especially now, because we're not found in the Beis Medrash. So we're home, and we have all the other influences very often, and we have our phones, we have our computers, and there's a lot of other people that are like sort of, and things, and circumstances that are now sort of bombarding our mind with other types of hashkafas other than the Beis Medrash Tikka hashkafas. And so it's very important, Rabbi say, as we go forward, to try to grasp onto the Beis Medrash as much as we can. That's why it's so nice to spend Friday mornings with you on Zoom even, because we can come together as a tzibur and just like cry a little bit over what we lost. And maybe Tisha B'Av will be a bit stronger for us and more identifiable for us because we lost our Mikdash Ma'at, hopefully for not too much longer. But who knows? The Beis Medrash is the place that we're able to go in. It's the silo. It's the igloo. It's the hermetically sealed bubble that we can come into and remind ourselves why we were put in this world. Vayikra lo Naivach b'shmei. Don't be impressed with the Naivachs of the world. Don't be impressed with the Avery Fishers and the David Geffens and the Shea Stadiums, which is now City Field, and it's probably going to be something else coming down the road. Don't be impressed with Jefferson memorials and Lincoln memorials and Leningrad and Stalingrad. All these things are not impressive because we see with our own eyes how temporary they are. Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, that's true immortality. That's true perpetuity. Let's always try to work on our spiritual edifices, our spiritual buildings that we're building for ourselves, for our communities, for our children, for our grandchildren. And let's be less focused on all of the Gashmiyastika edifices that are so seemingly important and glamorous and permanent. Let's remind ourselves from the lack of the Mapakei how really impermanent they truly are.